Sri Sonika said the son of Vyasadeva, Srila Sukadeva Goswami, was a highly learned sage and was able to describe things in a poetic manner. What did Maharaj Parikshit again inquire from him after hearing all that he said? Okay, so this, of course, is the second canto. First canto is a preface. Who's speaking? What are their qualifications? Who's asking the question? What are their qualifications? So in the first canto, we meet Maharaj Parikshit and Sukadeva Goswami, their history in relationship to the topic. And what is the topic? Srimad Bhagavatam. You know? And under what circumstances is it being produced? That's in the first canto. And what is the purpose of Srimad Bhagavatam? So all these things are supposed to be in the preface of a book. So the first canto is a very nice preface. And here in the second canto, now of course we have the actual main story, which is Sukadeva Goswami talking to Maharaj Parikshit. And at the end of the first canto, he asks one question, which is really two questions. What is the duty of a man during his life? What is the dharma of a man during his life? And what is especially at the time of death? So Prabhupada says these two questions basically form the whole basis for the Bhagavatam. So Sukadeva Goswami answers in three chapters, first, second, and third chapter of the second canto. The first chapter is pantheism, you know, Brahman, Sat, Virat Rup. He says we should hear and chant about the universal form, you know, and we should sit in proper meditation to contemplate this. And once we're accustomed to this, we become more purified, then actually we can see God in our own heart, because we're a part of the universal form. Why not? So next chapter is then the change in heart. The Lord in the heart. The Lord in the heart. And then the third chapter then is pure devotional service, the change in heart. So Sat, Chit, Ananda. The ever-existing, all-pervasive world, spiritual nature. And then the specific localized aspect with different forms and varieties, understandable, knowable things. Chit, Paramatma. And then finally we can actually encounter Krishna as a person with a change in heart and these non-material ecstasies, aprakriti bhava, you know, which is introduced at the very end of the third chapter. So then Maharaj Parikshit says, okay, I'm very purified by your association, by this explanation, but I have no place to go, nothing to do, so, and I want to become more purified. You know? Prabhupada said he'd given up his family, his house, he'd given up being the protector of so many people, you know, his clothes, his cows, his horses. But still he was conscious of his body like that. So this is not very good if you're going to be bitten by a snake bird, you know, or ripped to pieces by wild dogs or something, you know. So by hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, we can actually come to the point of constant ecstasy. At that point, we're separated from the body. And the body, whatever happens to the body doesn't disturb us so much. Huh? So he asks these questions, and then in chapter 3, we're still with this description of pure devotional service, change in the heart, and he's been describing so many different demigods and different processes of worship, you know? But he finally comes to this verse, akama sarvakama ba mokshakama udarati tivrena bhakti yogena yajate purusham param. Whether you have desires for stability in your position, for a beautiful wife or husband, for the conquering your enemies, for health, whatever it is, or if you want to be free from these desires, or if you are free from these desires, then in every case you should worship the Supreme Lord with a very determined vow in bhakti yoga, like that. You know? So now then, the sages are asking if Maharaj Parikshit asked more questions like that. And Prabhupada has a nice purport written before he left India. A pure devotee, he wrote this after he came to the United States. A pure devotee of the Lord automatically develops all godly qualities. Some of the prominent features of both those qualities are as follows. Some of the prominent features. He is kind. This is very interesting. Actually, I was trying to find, because Prabhupada says that Krishnadas Kaviraj lists these, and I was thinking it was in terms of the author receiving the authority in the chapter 8 in the Adilila. But there is just a few qualities of Haridas, of the priest, I think, not 26 qualities. And I did a Wikipedia search thing, or what do you call it, Google search, and it kept coming back with the list of the qualities, but I still couldn't find out where Krishnadas Kaviraj says this, so maybe later on somebody can inform us. But it does take you, of course, to 5.18.12. If you're an American, the number 1812 is easy to remember, because that was the war with the evil British. Evil British. Fifth canto. 5.18.12. And it's a verse that Prabhupada quotes again and again. And I guess the Acharyas also. And it's being, we can look at it as being paraphrased here. A pure devotee of the Lord automatically develops all godly qualities. Yashyasti bhaktir bhagavatira kenchana sarvai gunais tatra samasate sura harabha bhaktasya kuto mahagunad manoratena sati dahahi babahi. Yeah. So, if you look at 5.18.12, it's actually a part of the prayers by Prahlad Maharaj. The fifth canto, 18th chapter, like that, have different varshas, and Hanuman, Lakshmi, Prahlad, they're all offering prayers to their principal deities, Ram, Pradyumna, and here Nrisimhadev. And also the Bija prayer for Lord Nrisimhadev. Om Namo Bhagavate Narasimhaya Namaste Jastejas Yavidavida Bhava. That's how the prayers start off. So they're nice prayers. And I think one more verse in there is actually prominent. Actually, it's the verse that Prabhupada cites to start that volume. Yeah. So, and the purport then, Prabhupada also mentions these 26 qualities like that. So when I was going through these, it's kind of like, you can take the exact opposite, or you could say, Madame Mohan taught me this. He is cruel, he is violent, he is a liar. So I was going through these. We can all do this together. You can think if you actually have all the exact opposite qualities, the 26 faults. You possess all 26 faults. Okay. Are we kind? Are we kind? Maybe we're kind because we're getting enough to eat. Are we peaceful? Same way, you know. Are we truthful? And I was seeing that, you know, I can continuously tell little fibs here and there to make my life more comfortable. You know, just like, oh, this and that. Oh, I've had enough to eat, or this and that, whatever, you know. So, this is a question of truthful. Truthful really meaning, do we maintain the spiritual platform, and are we truthful about the fact that we are devotees of Krishna and other people are devotees of Krishna? Equable, faultless, magnanimous. This is something I especially encountered in Bhakti Swarup Damodar Maharaj, my sannyas guru. And he was from Manipur. You know, I think in general the qualities are there. In Manipur, he's had this kind of development of character as being something more important than in education, than developing technical abilities like that. So Maharaj was also always like talking about that, about being generous with people, you know, with devotees, and giving them donations for their service and things like that. And of course the experience was that when you were created an atmosphere of generosity, it went around. The people were generous with you, with their time and their money and things like that. Yeah. So magnanimous. Mild. Yeah. Probably these all have specific definitions like that. Clean. So Prabhupada emphasizes taking a bath 3 times a day and so many Brahminical rules for cleanliness. But then also, of course, he emphasizes remaining clean internally by always chanting the Maha Mantra. And of course, it's not enough just to have it on your lips, but your mind should also be thinking about the mantra when you're chanting. And the intelligence, buddhi, should be chanting with a proper attitude, like that. And then we keep ourselves, you know, clean. Non-possessive. Okay. So for a devotee, he wants to possess things that are useful for his service, like that. Achihara prayasascha. When we're giving lectures on this, sometimes we ask the ladies, how many saris is too many saris? Okay, it's an interesting challenge for the ladies to think about that. Prabhupada says an ordinary girl will not be satisfied with less than 2 or 3 dozen saris. Okay, yeah. But when Mother Uttama, she's a wife of Partadaras Das up in Canada, and a pujari, and her husband was head pujari. So her response was very nice. She says it depends if she's a pujari or not. Because if she's a pujari, then she has to have clean saris. You know? So that's the whole thing. We're possessive in terms of attached, in terms of things that are useful for our service, important for our service. But other than that, you know, we just take whatever Krishna sends easily without too much effort. Number 10, a well-wisher to all. So we begin to see this more and more. We were not, yeah, it's not, maybe these things are progressive, because as long as we're not attached to so many things, and then we don't have any kind of conflict with people. You know? And actually we begin to see that if people are advancing in their service, it's good for me, because then I can use their service, you know, to enhance my service. So we actually are wishing everybody to advance in devotional service. Satisfied. This reminds me that Prabhupada says a brahmana, the satisfaction of the mind is the first quality for a brahmana, for controlling the senses. And you can see this, the mind becomes so greedy, you know, for this and that, different experiences. But if you just take a little effort to let it be satisfied, to let it contemplate what it has, you know, then it can become peaceful like that. You know? So satisfied, surrendered to Krishna, without hankering, simple. Now, someplace else, Prabhupada defines this as without unnecessary plans for sense gratification. You know? Because when we start making unnecessary plans for sense gratification, then it's not going to be easily obtained in terms of the natural function of the material world. So we have to start making all these complicated things. If we're not satisfied with horses and oxen, our feet for transportation, and we want to like have chariots that go like the wind and have hundred horsepower, then we have to have all these complicated arrangements for drilling the earth and extracting the oil and refining it and then distributing it and then producing high quality roads and then producing these cars, you know. Of course, you can see so many advertisements for cars. Yeah. So simple, Prabhupada's defining is not making unnecessary plans for sense gratification. Fixed, I'm not sure exactly, but of course, unflinching faith in something divine, you know, some kind of relationship to Krishna and Krishna's abode, like that. Mantra, you know, self-controlled, a balanced eater. Okay, a balanced eater. Of course, it's a very big process. Little children, Bhakti, was it Purna Vidyamaraj? He said, when you're giving lectures to children, always give examples of food. Because they can relate to that, the level of anamaya. But I can also see, you know, myself, because this happens automatically when we try and like think of the welfare of Krishna. When we're trying to offer a nice bhoga to Krishna, and we're thinking about, well, is this going to make Krishna sick? Has he had too many sweets today? So we actually start trying to think about taking Krishna, care of Krishna as a parent or something like that, even a servant. Then automatically we'll offer a balanced diet to Krishna and we'll get our own results. He's sane. Well, that's an interesting topic. Yeah. Mannerly. I think this is, again, is kind of like the etiquette in life of offering people a seat, offering them a glass of water, giving them a few words of pleasant speech, asking them about their particular occupation in Varnashram. These are all like courtesies and formalities, but not without meaning, like that. So a Vaishnava automatically develops these qualities of a proper courtesy and hospitality. Prideless, grave, sympathetic, friendly, okay, poetic, expert, and silent. What is it? Then some, these are all qualities of Krishna, supposedly, and expanded in terms of the jivas in different ways. I think a genius, but genius means somebody who can defeat somebody else in newer and newer ways in argument, or something. Daksha, expert, maybe means somebody who can do many tasks at the same time, like that. Of course, there's a very nice example of a business consultant who was hired to give some training to the executives in the company. So one of his topics was time management. And he brought a big, big glass jar and put it on the table. And he put some good-sized rocks into it, and he asked everybody, is it full? And the executives said, yeah, it looks full. So he brought out a jar of very fine sand. Instead of pouring the sand and shaking the jar, and the sand settled down and filled it all up. And he asked everybody, is it full now? And he said, well, yeah. So he pulled a jar of water out and started pouring the water in. Then he asked, is it full now? And one of the guys laughed and said, well, the way you're going, maybe something else can go in there, but it looks full. So the guy said, yeah, I think as far as I know, it's full also. But he said, what you should do is put the big rocks in first. Block out your big time. And more important than a calendar is your priorities. And keep refreshing, what are your priorities each day? What are your priorities each fortnight? What are your priorities in life? You know? And so then once you do this, we can start adding so many details. Like every day I used to do the noon offering in Artik in the temple in San Francisco sometimes. So after it came off I made the offering, would come off, set up the Artik paraphernalia. And it was usually about 10 minutes before I had to go on or something like that again. And so I started, there was maybe four or five books, just all kind of odd books in the Pujari room. So it was one volume of Chaitanya Charitamrita. So I started to read that, and it's amazing. Probably even recommends this, just taking small, bite-sized portions of his books frequently. Because I could read a few pages, and the next day my mind would come right back into it, and I would start being absorbed in a little bit of bhava there in terms of the ecstasy and reading and hearing and even new ideas. So expert, we can become more and more qualified to do many things at the same time like that. Okay, 26 qualities. Yeah. Out of these 26 prominent features of a devotee, as described by Krishnadas Kaviraj in his Chaitanya Charitamrita, where is that? I also looked at Bhumi and Dharma talking, and that's a different list of qualities of great personalities. The qualification of being poetic is especially mentioned here in relation to Sukadeva Goswami. The presentation of Srimad Bhagavatam by his recitation is the highest poetic contribution. He was a self-realized learned sage. In other words, he was a poet amongst the sages. So we mentioned before that, you know, for example, Radhika Raman, our good disciple or our good guru, he graduated very young from Oxford, and I think it's something theology and mathematics, it's theology and something else. So very well. And while he was studying Sanskrit there in theology, they brought one Professor Rao from South India, from Madras. And he was an emeritus professor of Sanskrit. And he was actually specifically brought to teach them Bhagavatam, to give a lecture series, maybe for like 12 students. So he told them, he said that that I've read all of the major Sanskrit literatures. And he said, I've also read most of the minor ones. And he said, I'm not being proud or arrogant, but, you know, having done it for 50 years, and I should have done this. Yeah. And he said, when it is described that the Puranas are very, very beautiful and impressive, like stars in the sky, until the moon of Srimad Bhagavatam comes up, he said it's not an exaggeration. For the beauty of the poetry, the depth of the philosophy, and the sophistication of the grammar, Srimad Bhagavatam is in a class by itself. Most of the Puranas don't have commentaries, but the Srimad Bhagavatam has a commentary by every single person available, because they're all trying to prove that it supports their philosophy. Srimad Bhagavatam has Vedic Sanskrit. You know, it has like something like, what it is, like 8 different meters. And so in general, even I saw it, maybe I mentioned this, that there's one atheist who believe in evolution, who believe that the Puranas and everything else were mythology. But even he, big scholar, even he was commenting that the Srimad Bhagavatam was the highest, you know, manifestation of the superiority of evolution. Isn't evolution wonderful? It's produced the Srimad Bhagavatam. So, it's the absolute truth. However you approach it, it comes out being the greatest. You know, the greatest enemy, the greatest friend, whatever. So, this Sukadeva Goswami, of course, is the person who did this. And as described, I actually haven't read it, I think. The Goswami is describing this. Sukadeva Goswami is Radharani's parrot. You know? And I guess he's a Sukha, not a Sari. Maybe parrot. You know? So, such beautiful recitation, you know, and taking it and making it more tasteful like that. So Sukadeva Goswami is being appreciated by the sages in Namashiranya for these qualifications, and therefore they're asking Shonaka Rishi if Maharaj Pariksit asked more questions from Sukadeva Goswami. And we're supposed to go to the next verse today. I don't know why exactly. Okay. Etach Chu Shru Shatam Vidvan Suta No Arhasi Basitum Katahari Katodarka Satang Shu Sadasi Dhruvam. O learned Suta, please continue to explain such topics to us, because we are all eager to hear. I said Shushusha. Besides that, topics which result in the discussion of Lord Hari should certainly be discussed in the assembly of devotees. Katahari Katodarka. Satang probably means devotees. Yeah. And Dhruva means with determination. Please continue talking about these topics. We are very eager to hear. And topics which result the discussion of Hari should be discussed by the assembly of devotees. So this is the kind of the main point that Prabhupada will talk about here, is that topics which result. Purport. As we have already quoted above from the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu of Rupa Goswami, even mundane things, if dovetailed in the service of the Lord, Sri Krishna, are accepted as transcendental. So what is the verse that Prabhupada is paraphrasing here or citing? Remember? Yeah? Nirbandhi Krishna Sambandhi Yukta Vairagi Uchate. And try to memorize the first part too. Anasakta Vishai Santam. Yeah, okay. For example, the epics or the histories of Ramayana and Mahabharata, which are specifically recommended for the less intelligent classes, women, shudras, and unworthy sons of the higher castes, are also accepted as Vedic literature, because they are compiled in connection with the activities of the Lord. Mahabharata is accepted as the 5th division of the Vedas after its first 4 divisions, namely Sama, Yajur, Rig, and Atharva. The less intelligent do not accept Mahabharata as part of the Vedas, but great sages and authorities accept it as the 5th division of the Vedas. Bhagavad Gita is also part of the Mahabharata, and it is full of the Lord's instruction for the less intelligent class of men. Some less intelligent men say that Bhagavad Gita is not meant for householders. But such foolish men forget that Bhagavad Gita was explained to Arjuna, a grihastha, family man, and spoken by the Lord in his role as a grihastha. So I never heard that argument. It's not for grihasthas. Maybe it's become an obsolete argument at this point.
Yeah.
Okay. So Bhagavad Gita is for a less intelligent class of men. So Bhagavad Gita, although containing the high philosophy of Vedic wisdom, is for the beginners in the transcendental science. And Srimad Bhagavatam is for graduates and postgraduates in the transcendental science. Of course, this reminds us that Prabhupada is saying the Srimad Bhagavatam begins where the Mahabharata stops, both historically and philosophically, like that. Bhagavad Gita is Gita Upanishad. And Prabhupada says the Bhagavad Gita is for cultivation of the intellect, where Srimad Bhagavatam is direct cultivation of the soul. So, Krishna says in chapter 7, Arjuna, you should worship him who is the oldest, who is the cause of everything, who causes everything to develop. So the way he's describing this worshipable deity is describing the Paramatma, like that. And so pretty much, this is Bhagavad Gita is for liberation. But of course, once you're liberated, then automatically you can acquire knowledge from the Super Soul, from the Paramatma, if they're willing to give it to us, because we can turn to them now, like that. So Bhagavad Gita is Upanishad, and as we're reading the first canto, first two cantos, Krishna's names are always like Achyuta, Adhoksaja, Svaipum Sam Parao Parodarmo Yato Bhakti Adhoksaja. So still starting off like kind of slow to not frighten away people who have a bad experience of cheating priests who want to claim that God is a person like you and me, and he wants all these gross gratifications, So Srimad Bhagavatam starts like that, but of course we have the Bhagavad Gita as it is and the Bhaktivedanta purports. So right from the very beginning, Prabhupada is introducing the idea that Krishna is a person and his abode is a real place like that. So in that way, because we're following Lord Chaitanya, right from the very beginning we have at the conclusion of Bhagavad Gita manifest, at the conclusion of Srimad Bhagavatam. But in general, they're just starting off with these basic principles, how you're not the body, there is a supreme Atma, who is related to everybody, who knows everything, who's all-powerful. Okay. And as we go on, then we begin to realize we can actually have a relationship with him. Therefore, literatures like Mahabharata, the Puranas, and similar other literatures, which are full of the pastimes, of the Lord, are all transcendental literatures, and they should be discussed with full confidence in the society of great devotees. One time, I remember Prabhupada was in his room in Bombay, and he was discussing with Sridhar Maharaj the preaching to the universities, the science preaching, and very enthusiastic. And then Tamal Krishna Maharaj asked him, "Well, Prabhupada, it's like evening time now, do you want some kirtan?" And the report is that Prabhupada looked with a little bit of a smile on his face to Srup Damodar and said they don't know what real kirtan is, and discussing all this preaching like that is a real kirtan. But Prabhupada did stop and have a formal kirtan like that. Talking about our service, talking about how to manufacture something, how to repair something, talking about making some social adjustments so devotees can work together effectively, these are all things that lead to discussions about Krishna, his name, his form, like that. And so therefore they are also transcendental. I've heard they ask Prabhupada, when you touch a doorknob, does it become spiritual? And Prabhupada answered, as long as I'm touching it. Of course, some things like the spiritual master's sitting place, his bed, and his shoes are always maintained in a spiritual position by Krishna, and nobody should use these, it says. So, a very nice point. But of course, how much are we using things for our sense gratification, and how much are we using things for Krishna service? So that degree, it seems like they become spiritualized to that degree. Okay, we go on here, the purport. The difficulty is that such literatures, when discussed by professional men, appear to be mundane literature, like histories or epics, because there are so many historical facts and figures. So here we have some poor girl screaming her head off and had all these books she has at the university or something like that. Yeah. And this is the fact that I know one of our friends, Dorabasan Montenegro Devoto, when she was younger, she was studying Sanskrit at the University of Lima. Catholic University in Lima. And she said the professor there was teaching it so brutally, based upon the memorization of grammar rules and all this kind of stuff. So she developed such a bad experience that it was very difficult for her, to consider trying to study Sanskrit again. So this is a difficulty when such literatures are discussed by professional people. They make them into something mundane, boring, everything else like that, or a little bit of psychological gratification. The Mahabharata, if you read it, there's things about Dharma and things like that which stimulate our feelings of loyalty, our feelings of bravery. But it's really superficial in terms of how these qualities are being manifested in terms of the soul. It becomes so bright, So we have to hear these things. It is said here, therefore, that such literatures should be discussed in the assembly of devotees. Satam prasangat mama virya samvido bhavati karna something sadabaha. Unless they are discussed by devotees, such literatures cannot be relished by the higher class of men. So becoming purified, you probably can notice this. If you're addicted to alcohol and tobacco, beer and cigarettes, and you're just absorbing these gross consciousness, then your mind is going to be like a beast, just kind of doing its own thing and happy or angry depending upon the environment that you're stimulating it with. But as we become more purified, then we can actually distinguish the mind from the intelligence. We can stay on the intellectual platform, following the different techniques and things of Buddha, Confucius, Socrates. And finally, if we become more purified, then the soul actually wakes up and we actually begin to feel our relationship with Krishna. And then if they are discussed by devotees, such literatures can be relished by a higher class of men. I know with the Ekadasi sometimes you get into very purified consciousness and you read Prabhupada's books and you realize they're so fine. They're like a big network of red, like a network of cloth, so fine, so transcendental. So even a person on the transcendental platform, goes ahead and chants and hears these things using all of his spiritual potency. And of course, here's Krishna and Balaram, also learning grammar. So the conclusion is that the Lord is not impersonal in the ultimate issue. He is a supreme person, and he has different activities. He is the leader of all living entities, and he descends at his will and by his personal energy to reclaim the fallen souls. Thus he plays exactly like the social, political, or religious leader. Because such roles ultimately culminate in the discussions of the topics of the Lord, all such preliminary topics are also transcendental. That is a way of spiritualizing the civic activities of human society. So marriage, fighting to protect the kingdom, decisions about economic distribution, all these things, when they're connected ultimately with Krishna Katha, they're very nice. Like some girl getting married, she may have her own deities, which she's had since she's been a little girl, and then those have to be integrated with the deities in her new family's ashram, her husband, like that. So all these different topics and everything else can all be connected to Krishna. All of our social life and social activities, all of our civic activities, especially through the deity worship. Prabhupada says that a sannyasi is satisfied being able to remember Krishna within his heart. That's his pride about how he's always able to focus his mind on Krishna. But then a grihastha, automatically, especially if he has some opulence, the bodily concept will be so strong that it has to be deity worship. And of course, there can be one's personal deities, the deities in the house, but then there's the civic deities, like Radharaman is the deity for a whole community, or Nachi is a whole town where everybody worships him, Govindaji. So in that way, we have a Krishna Balaram temple. That way, we have our civic deities, and then everybody can identify themselves very easily as being a servant of the deities. And that stimulates, of course, the subtle consciousness of being a servant. My first temple president, Bhaktadas, when he was initiated, Prabhupada said, "Your name is Bhaktadas. The more you think you are the servant in any situation, material or spiritual, the more you'll become happy. And the more you try to think of yourself as the master, the more you will go to hell." Men have inclinations for studying history and many other mundane literatures, stories, fiction, dramas, magazines, newspapers, YouTube, everything. So let them be dovetailed with the transcendental service of the Lord, and all of them will turn to the topics relished by all devotees. So somehow or other we have to generate so much literature and so many dramas and so many things which will get people in the right direction. And of course in the beginning it's pantheism, so just to have nice atmosphere. You see many temples are like that. They like this nice atmosphere, a little bubbling electric fountain, nice. And one temple in South America, Mar del Plata, they had Prabhupada's Vyasa san, but it was sitting on these nice river rocks, nice, more smooth by the rivers, different colors, and very, very nice big vases with dried flowers and dried grasses in them. So the whole thing, a lot of nice wood. Many temples like that. They may not be so big, but they've done a very, very nice job in terms of decorating, in terms of natural elements and so on like that, and connecting all these elements to Krishna. And then once that's done, we become purified, then we become more interested in standard prayers and stories like that. The propaganda of the Lord is impersonal, that he has no activity, that he is a dumb stone without any name and form, has encouraged people to become godless, faithless demons. And the more they deviate from the transcendental activities of the Lord, the more they become accustomed to mundane activities that only clear their path to hell instead of returning home back to Godhead. So all of us, at least me, have to be careful of this, because Maya is quite satisfied to take us down, one step a day. Maybe it's the 500 steps to hell, but Maya is quite satisfied if you've fallen down, stepped down from a higher consciousness, from a more sacrificing, generous consciousness, to something more self-concerned, more bodily concerned. If she can just take us down one step a day, and so we become, accustomed to mundane activities that only clear a path to hell instead of returning back home, back to Godhead. Srimad Bhagavatam begins with the history of the Pandavas, with necessary politics and social activities. Yet Srimad Bhagavatam is said to be the Paramahamsa Samhita, or the Vedic literature meant for the topmost transcendentalist. And it describes Param Jnanam, the highest transcendental knowledge. Pure devotees of the Lord are like Paramahamsas, and they are like swans who know the art of sucking milk out of a mixture of milk and water. So extracting the essence of everything in terms of devotional service, in terms of family life, and all those things that can be related to Krishna. In the beginning, we have to balance our spiritual life and our material life. The morning is for spiritual life, daytime is for making money, and the evening is for enjoying in a bodily concept in a civilized fashion. But as we go on, Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, we see everything as related to Krishna. It's just not a matter of the balancing happens automatically then. Unless I have good bodily health, how can I do my service? How can I control my mind? You know? So then it's no longer a matter of just getting enough gratification for the body. It's just we, you know, and also sacrificing, there's also doing some for the mind, or for the soul. It's at that point automatically, you know, we adjust everything. You know? But in the beginning, okay, yeah, we have to take some advice how to keep a balanced schedule and extract the nectar from the waste. Also later on, we see it's all nectar. Okay, thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. So any questions or comments?
Timer, just one moment so I can unmute everybody. No, I did the other. Okay, I've unmuted. You know, I wanted to really apologize. I have no idea how I stuck those two verses together. I just spaced out. I'm so sorry. Yeah, that was a lot to cover in one class. So forgive me. Sometimes it happens.
Yeah.
Like 100 times a day I make mistakes.
Yeah. So you're not, it's one of the 26 faults of the devotee.
You know, I have one comment I wanted to make, if I could just make it real quick. Let's see. I'm going to bring my screen over. I wanted to show you something. Everybody else can see it. It was on start meeting.
Okay.
Let's see. I'm getting there. Let's see. Compact. Almost there.
It came and went. Okay, now your screen is there. You see your...
Okay, here we go. You see where we have this sadhu's quality?
All we see is gray.
Still?
No, there it is now. Okay, now we see sadhu's qualities.
So yeah. Ravindashara Prabhu put this together for the...
Oh, there it is. Madhya 22:78-80.
Okay. And he did a really in-depth analysis.
This is the instructions to Sanatan Goswami. This is Sanatan Shiksha. 20-23, something like that. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, it was very nicely done. One thing I wanted to point out, this is my comment, just stealing the research that he did. You know, when you mentioned about sanity, a devotee is sane. And then you said that's a whole topic in itself.
Yeah.
So down here we have as far as I can see, it's apramatta, without inebriation, and then it's described in the Mounter Williams dictionary as apramatta means not careless, careful, attentive, and vigilant. So that's
Prabhupada kind of says the same thing that is. Pramat and anamat. Anamat means crazy, talking to yourself, means psychotic, and pramat means neurotic. And so then basically what he's kind of saying is this is just kind of like a general mild distractedness. You know, we're always going around with many branches. Our mind becomes absorbed in this, it becomes absorbed in that, and we think of something else, and nothing else. And so it's not like vigilant, it's not careful, it's not attentive. So it's kind of mildly spaced out and then doing all kinds of odd things because of that. And of course, sometimes it leads us into bigger problems. Okay, what's the word? Mataha. Aham sarvashya prabhava mata. Mata? Those who know this. So pramataha may also be related to the same thing with the suffix pra. And they're attentive, they know this. Mati, very intelligent. Yeah.
Paula Butcher has something in the chat.
My goodness, okay, I'll go click on the chat here. Clickety click click. And it says Balabhadra. It went away.
I'm right here, Maharaj. Dhanavas was wrong.
Balabhadra comes and goes. No, your chat's coming and going. It says, how does an atheist see the Srimad Bhagavatam as the ultimate proof of evolution? Because it's so great, you know. See, first the atoms combine, the electrons and neutrons combine, they produce atoms, the atoms combine, they produce molecules. By evolution, the molecules combine together to produce DNA. They produce one-celled animals, they produce multi-celled animals, all by natural selection, by chance. Those produce, amphibians, you know, and some of them stay on the land. And it keeps on going on like this whole thing of chance variation, followed by natural selection. And there's so many philosophical problems with this. And then actually scientists now who are rebelling, they're coming up with problems in the mechanism. So practically speaking, it's a really, you know, what's the word, bad, you know, philosophy description of life, what is nature. But anyways, it keeps on going, and finally we get society. And then we start getting social Darwinism, that different societies, by chance, I guess, you know, develop different habits and different things like that, even genetic things. And then they survive. So, of course, this was Hitler in the Third Reich. This was a large part of their philosophy, that might makes right. And because we can dominate others by our natural great qualities as being Aryans, that's the only justification we need. And therefore, we have no more necessity for justification for genocide than the fact that we can do it, that these are inferior people, and therefore we can just eliminate them and allow, you know, a higher, faster evolution. So society then starts producing literature, writing, and of course the finest production by chance and by natural selection is Srimad Bhagavatam. And that's what he's appreciating. Yeah. And many people who know world literature, I mean, this is a fact, we appreciate the Srimad Bhagavatam is in a class by itself. It's just compared to Arabian Nights, the works of Shakespeare, or Don Quixote, is just, and it's so fantastic, you know. I think that the the actual quotation that Prabhupada uses about the fifth Veda, it's from the Majadani Shruti, which one professor told me was a later invention. And Radhika says whatever doesn't support the idea, they say this came later, you know. So the Majadani Shruti is the one Prabhupada quotes in the Bhagavatam. And there, I think it says the Itihasas. So the Mahabharata and the Ramayana are both included as, and the Puranas are included as the fifth Veda. The Puranas and the Mahabharata and the Ramayana, yeah, they're both included.
Anybody else have anything?
Hare Krishna, Guru Maharaj.
Hi, Krishna.
Thank you for giving class. Two questions, but a comment on, I took a class called The Psychology of, or no, Evolution, Evolutional Psychology, or something like that. Anyway, in the book, they would always talk about natural selection, and they would always capitalize the N and the F. So I just kept thinking, well, they've given God another name. And
his wonderful.
Another name now for God is natural selection. But my question is about... Okay, my question is about the first verse that you read, the last sentence. He was a self-realized learned sage. In other words, he was a poet among the sages, talking about Shukadev Goswami. So, as far as I know, Kavi Chandra means the moon among poets. Would that be a name for Shukadev Goswami as well?
Yeah, I think it would apply, yeah, Kavi Chand. It would also be a name for him. It's a general thing, you know. So it might also apply to somebody else, you know, Shakuntala, whatever his name is, the guy who wrote that, a very famous person. Yeah. But in general, yeah, I think, you know, Kavi Chandra would sound like, of course it could also be Krishna too, because Krishna and Balaram also produce wonderful poetry. But in general, you know, he's considered, like you say, like the poet amongst the sages like that. Yeah. the moon amongst the poets.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Huh?
And then in the second purport you said, or we read, as we have already quoted from the above, quoted above from the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu of Rupa Goswami, and when you read that, you said, does anybody know where that verse is? I'm trying to memorize it, like that. So what verse is that? I didn't quite catch which verse it was.
I think it starts off with Anasaktasya Vishayan. But the second pada is the one Prabhupada quotes the most. Nirbande Krishna Sambandhi Yukta Vairagya Uchite. And that's when he quotes all the time like that. Nirbande. Yeah. That which is disconnected.
Itartam Upayunjitaha. That's the first
one. Nirbande Krishna Sambandhi, yeah. So Nirbande means unbound. Disconnected. Sambandhi means to connect. Nirbande Krishna Sambandhi. Yukta, connection, yoga, vairagya. So real renunciation means to use everything for Krishna, not to give anything up, like that. Yeah. But in the beginning, of course, is a tendency towards impersonalism. Okay, but later on, we see how everything can be used for Krishna, even tobacco.
Household tobacco?
It's a great herb for bruises. Natural tobacco, if you just chew it up and make a plaster out and put it on a bruise, it'll take out all the swelling and stuff like that very naturally. It's a nice, healthy herb. But God never planned for us to smoke the stuff.
The flowers also very beautiful.
Tobacco flowers, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Imagine even Krishna is amazed at how the jivas can come up with perverted ways to use material nature. I never even thought. The people are so perverted. Yeah. Well, we're kind of packing up here. We're going completely mad because we just came back from South America with all these heavy, intense programs now, and we're just loading up, packing up in the ISKCON Leadership Sangha. Is going to be for 1 week in Mayapur. I think they had 400 people last year. I think maybe 700 this year. And it's for like, what's the word? It's like middle managers. Middle managers, like Sankirtan leaders, vice presidents, presidents, like that. And so with the education program with Sesha and Ramgiri Dari and Panadas, we're trying to make a nice, solid presentation for how education, it has to be a part of our ISKCON portfolio. What does it mean? And how we can develop it in ISKCON. In terms of, when we have a big university, nice university, we're able to do so much, of course, in promoting our society and developing ourselves like that. And some things are already there. Some university programs are already there in ISKCON like that. Yeah. So we're packing up. And I guess next Friday we'll be in Sridham, Mayapur. Like that. Yeah. So I guess we'll be able to come back in 3 weeks if we can maybe get some more classes. It was very, very nice for us, the association here.
Oh, thank you, Maharaj.
Thank you so much.
Very nice class.
Yeah, we'll definitely be waiting for you to come back.
Okay, Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.